This is Mishmash, a weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. Here's an article I couldn't not click on. Michigan lawmaker says legislature infected with systemic corruption. That article was written by Detroit News reporter Craig Mauger, who joins me now. Hello, Craig. Welcome back to Mishmash.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
Former Republican speakers of the House have been facing criminal accusations over the last few years. Speaker Lee Chatfield is under investigation by the state attorney general's office. Speaker Rick Johnson recently pleaded guilty to accepting bribes as chair of the state's medical marijuana licensing board. And this accusation that there's, quote, systemic corruption in the state legislature came from Representative James DeSana. Craig, obviously, these two instances were a big factor in his accusations, but tell us more about what is actually going on here.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting to hear a representative speak so specifically about what he sees as wrongdoing, not only by people across the aisle, but within his own caucus. I mean, he was talking about Lee Chatfield, who was the speaker in 2019 and 2020, but he was saying that Republicans in the legislature had done nothing about what Lee Chatfield was doing, and he was asserting that they knew about it. He was saying that people knew Lee Chatfield was doing wrong and no one stood up and said anything. And he was trying to make the point that there's a system in Lansing where if you speak up against leadership, you get punished. So nobody speaks out against leadership. That was kind of his greater point that he was making here.
One thing I found interesting here is that Rep. James DeSana is a new member. This is his first term as a lawmaker. I mean, that's a bold move for a newbie and for someone who hasn't actually been around long enough, really, to be throwing this type of accusation. It's surprising. I mean, how would he know?
Yeah, and it's a great question. And I had a lawmaker who's been around for a while text me saying, how would DeSana know this? He wasn't here. He's only been here for a few months. He's speaking without any proof to back this up. And that's possible. But you also got to think that he's out here talking to his colleagues, some of whom were here. He's probably picking up things potentially that people are telling him that maybe they wouldn't tell me or say otherwise publicly. But it's pretty interesting. The context of these remarks was he was speaking to a group of conservative activists and others that are part of this movement called the Grand New Party that some very conservative members of the Republican caucus are forming to try to revive the GOP, in their eyes at least.
What has been the reaction to this? DeSana is Republican, and Republicans have really been having a hard time lately. There's been a push by members of the far right to really take over the party. How does this play into what is going on with the Republican Party right now?
I mean, it points to a lot of the undercurrents at play here. During this conversation that he had with some of his supporters, he said that people like Lee Chatfield and former Speaker Rick Johnson, who pleaded guilty to bribery as part of this marijuana investigation, he said these type of people have, quote, ruined the Republican brand. They've ruined our brand, he said. So there is this idea among some of the Republicans in Lansing that they have a problem with these corruption allegations. With Lee Chatfield, they're merely allegations that haven't even been brought in the form of criminal charges yet. It's just an ongoing investigation by the Attorney General's office. And in Rick Johnson's case, there was an allegation and he pleaded guilty to it already. And I think DeSana is also kind of getting a larger issue within the party that the GOP in Michigan doesn't know which direction to go in. It doesn't know where to go. I mean, there are some Republicans that want to try to get back to talking to voters in the middle of the aisle. People who might vote Democrat might vote Republican sometimes. Some GOP leaders are trying to get their members to get focused on what do we need to do to win over those swing voters. There are other Republicans within the state party that are saying we have to return to the base. We've got to be more conservative. We've got to return to the principles of the party. And that's what's going to turn out people to vote. And they have these two very distinct visions for how to go about this. And no one has made a no one has the capacity or the power or the sway to kind of come in and say, this is the direction we're going to go. And now let's all start working in that direction. And without that, they're kind of aimlessly wandering right now.
And what about Democrats? Have they had any big reaction? I mean, were any of the accusations directed at Democrats the way they seem to be really pointedly directed at Republicans?
I don't think his allegations were as pointed at Democrats. He wasn't naming names as much. I think he was voicing a lot of frustration, as no one would be surprised that a Republican would be frustrated with the decisions Democrats are making. They have policy disagreements. But I think Democrats in general are kind of loving comments like this from people like James DeSana, because they're just saying, look at the feuding within this party. Even one of their own members is acknowledging that their brand is having an issue right now because of the corruption allegations going on. And in the state legislature, for listeners who don't follow this any day, for one party to be able to point and say, look at these two members of the other party fighting, you know, that party that gets to point the finger that way just loves it. I mean, they love it.
Craig, let's catch up on some bills in the legislature. There's a proposal to allow some alcoholic beverages at university sporting events like football and hockey. What are the specifics of this actually bipartisan proposal?
Yeah, this is going to be quite interesting. It's been something that's been out there for a few years right now. There is this campaign to allow universities like the University of Michigan and Michigan State University to sell alcohol at college football games, at college basketball games, at college hockey games. There obviously are a lot of people at these events who would be interested in perhaps having a beer as they took in the game. But so far, there hasn't been a willingness in the legislature to actually advance these bills, have votes on them, and make them happen. But there's a lot of people from both sides of the aisle, key lawmakers, some people tied to the colleges, who are interested in seeing this happen. So, you know, it's one of those political issues where there's going to be a back and forth. And we'll see over the next 2 years whether this Democrat-controlled legislature is willing to put this into law.
Is there any precedent for serving alcohol at these types of sporting events?
Yeah, there's precedent. I mean, there are other, I think a majority of the universities in the Big Ten, which is the conference that Michigan and Michigan State University are in, already sell alcohol at football games. So there's a precedent for it. And the supporters of this measure are pointing to that fact and saying, well, all these other colleges are already doing this, so we can do it, and we can make this happen, and we can do it in a safe way. And they've argued that it is actually safer to have alcohol in the game, where you have someone selling it to fans, kind of overseeing what's happening, instead of having people drinking very large amounts at tailgates outside the event, and then walking in and not having any read on how much is being consumed outside.
Another bill that's floating around would outlaw holding your phone while driving. I'm sure this is something that a lot of drivers would approve of in principle, but I know I'm guilty of sometimes holding my phone just to maybe change a song, make a quick call. Give us the specifics on this one.
Yeah, this is another one. I mean, this is a bill that has been debated for a long time in Lansing. There has been an effort to do it, and now it's going to happen. I mean, it's already passed the House and Senate. Governor Whitmer has said she will sign this when it gets to her desk. It broadly says that you cannot hold a phone to make a call, to make a text messages, to send a text message, to be on social media while you are operating a vehicle. You can pick up your phone to put it on, a Bluetooth mode to have it go through your car's AV system, or to put your phone in a mount to then operate from the mount, which is viewed as a safer way to use a phone while you're driving. So there are some exemptions that would, allow you to operate a phone while you're driving in some ways. But as far as having the phone in your hand and using it with one hand on the steering wheel, one hand on your phone, that would be illegal under these proposals. And, there's a lot of statistics out there that say distracted driving is becoming an increasing threat to people. And I think lawmakers are saying, if we can save a few people's lives by doing this, then let's do it.
Michigan Democrats say they want to be more transparent about which projects get funding from the state budget. What are they responding to, and what is their plan for increased transparency?
Yeah, this is one to watch over the next few weeks. In the past years, especially last year, the state has approved these massive budgets they have inserted into these budgets at the last moment, where a lot of times people have no idea what is in them when they finally pass. Hundreds of millions of dollars of special projects, you know, projects for a museum here, a zoo here, a transportation project in this city. There'd just be a lengthy list of projects. People's districts would get projects that they didn't even request and they didn't know who pushed for them. It was all kind of orchestrated behind closed doors by the leaders of the legislature and the governor's office, and then just thrown in front of lawmakers for them to do a final vote soon after. There's been a lot of pushback to that strategy of crafting a state budget. And now Democrats, who won control in November, are trying to put forward, at least at this point, they're saying, a more transparent process. In the House, they've listed projects to get funding already weeks before the budget will get its final approval. In the Senate, they're trying to set up grant programs through a state department, where the state department would then have the ability to choose which projects get funding in a variety of different buckets. I mean, there's arguments on both sides. Some Republicans are saying this grant program strategy is actually not more transparent than doing it the way the legislature was doing it, because who's going to decide who gets the projects and what's their motivation? They would be subject to FOIA. However, the State Department, legislature is not subject to FOIA. So, I mean, this is a big, potentially precedent setting thing the Democrats are wrestling with right now, as to how to hand out money for special projects. I mean, this is something that happens in a lot of budgeting, but you can see whatever they arrive at in the next few weeks is going to be a standard that they are held to for the next few years.
Yeah, it's always easy to say, we want more transparency, let's be more transparent. But when you get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it's much more tricky.
Yeah, it is. And when they're going to be in the back room of the House and Senate in the next few weeks crafting the final aspects of this budget, and there's some lawmaker whose vote they need and he's demanding a project, are they going to stand there and say, hey, we're not going to give you the project because we're trying to do this earlier? Or are they going to say, here's the project for your district, sign on to the budget? We're going to be watching that.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We are currently in the midst of budget season. What are some of the big items being debated?
Oh, there's so many. I mean, I think we're going to get a budget that provides a record level of funding for K-12 schools. The specifics of how much of an increase schools are going to get per student is something to watch. The governor, the Senate, and House have all put out different ideas for where to arrive at there. Another issue that I've written about recently is the funding for online schools. This has been something that's been debated in Lansing year in and year out for many, many years. Democrats now in control, they have the ability to do what they wanted to do for a long time, and that is give cyber schools less money per student than regular K-12 schools, because they don't have building costs, they don't have busing costs, and the idea is they should get less money because of those things. The cyber schools are pushing back and saying, we might not have building costs and transportation costs, but we have all these other costs and expenses that maybe a traditional school doesn't have. We have more at-risk students, they say, students who have come to online learning for very specific reasons that mean we need more money to help them with social and emotional aspects of their education. So as it stands right now, the governor and Senate have said, let's fund cyber schools at 80% of what a normal school gets. The House has said, we're going to do more than 80%, but we're not going to do the full amount. Where they arrive on that one will be another precedent setting thing. Democrats are in control. They're going to be in control next year. They're going to have some major say the 2 years after that at minimum. What they do this year could set the standard for how they're going to approach that issue going forward.
A few years ago, there was a piece of legislation passed giving the legislature a very hard deadline on the budget. Given that the House, Senate, and governor's office are all Democrat, are there any concerns about getting the budget done on time this year?
I mean, at this point, it doesn't seem like people are concerned about this. The issue to watch is not whether they can get the budget approved by the legislature. It is, can they get Senate Republicans to provide some votes? Because again, you need the magic number, 2/3 of the Senate, to support giving a bill immediate effect for it to take effect early. If you don't get 2/3, the bill doesn't take effect until 90 days after the year session ends. So let's work this out. The fiscal year for the state begins October 1st. If you don't give immediate effect, the budget bills wouldn't take effect until sometime in 2024 under normal scheduling of how the legislature works. So they have to figure out, do we negotiate with Senate Republicans to try to get this immediate effect? That seems like the most likely possibility right now. But there are these other possibilities of, we don't get enough support for immediate effect and we have to adjourn the legislature early, come back for a special session later this year. That's another thing to watch. I mean, it's just, it's fascinating in that in the past, Democrats have either not controlled enough, you know, elements of this three-tiered stool to have this kind of influence, and they haven't had enough seats in the Senate to wield the immediate effect issue. So this is kind of a new and evolving kind of crossroads that they're at, and a lot of it is going to lie in how willing are the 18 Senate Republicans to really push this to the brink and say, hey, we're going to withhold votes for immediate effect and cause the Democrats a lot of heartburn and headaches over the next few days.
Craig Mauger is a reporter for the Detroit News. Craig, it is always such a pleasure to have you here on Mishmash.
We covered so much ground. I appreciate it.
Thanks again to Craig Mauger from the Detroit News. Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional help from Jack Philbrand. As always, if you listen to this podcast and you want to support it, you can do so by leaving us a review, or if you really, really like this podcast, and we truly, deeply hope that you do, you can support WDET. Just go to WDET.org/give. Without your support, honestly, this show and many of the other great programs from WDET just would not be possible. Thanks so much, and we'll talk to you next week.